Welcome home. We are WNST, Towson Baltimore. Baltimore Positive. We are positively into a crazy baseball week here and a trading deadline, as well as a slump. Luke Jones is the slump buster. He's going to be out doing Ravens things all week long, but certainly the Orioles doubleheadering and then welcoming in new opponents here this week. And maybe welcoming some new players as well. Certainly, we're going to find out more about Zach Eflin as well as Sir Anthony Dominguez. And Luke, I know there's a lot to talk about with new talent here, but the Craig Kimbrel thing over the weekend really begs the question as to how much this bullpen is going to get constructed before 6 p.m. on Tuesday night.
No question about it. And I think as the weekend came to an end and Craig Kimbrel did not pitch on Sunday as Yennier Cano got the ball for the ninth inning, and it was choppy, and not that it went perfectly by any stretch of the imagination, a really weird ninth inning, but Brandon Hyde confirmed he wanted to give Craig Kimbrel a quote breather over the remainder of the weekend after the struggles that we witnessed on Thursday and Friday. But Nestor, I'd be lying to you if I was sitting here and saying that I'm surprised by this development. I mean, this is why going back to spring training, I was telling you I wasn't confident in the construction of this bullpen. And that was before losing Tyler Wells and thinking he could be a factor in the bullpen, even though he'd started the year in the rotation. And that was certainly before losing Danny Coulomb till the month of September with him having the procedure and, you know, expected back. But what is he going to look like when he does get back for the remainder of the year? Craig Kimbrel, this is who he's been for several years now. And if we're going to be objective, and I've already seen people saying it over the weekend, they're not DFAing him, nor should they DFA him. Craig Kimbrel's had the overall body of work has had a pretty good year. He has. But when you have a 2-week stretch in late April into the middle of May, and you have another stretch now right around the trade deadline where you're going through it and you're struggling and you're blowing some games and you're giving up runs, that's not ideal because you don't have a ton of arms in that bullpen that you trust right now. And this is why I've said for quite a long time that I would love to see them get in a position where they can add another late inning arm that is capable of closing games, whether it's another team's closer, whether it's someone who has closed games, or whether it's someone who just has the capability and the stuff to close some games. Because I fully expect Craig Kimbrel to get himself righted again in the same way that he did back in the middle of May. And then he pitched really well for the 6-7 weeks that followed. But you don't know when he's going to go through one of these spells. And that's where it's tough. You know, we've talked about, can he pitch back-to-back days? We've talked about, can he go too long without pitching? How many pitches can he throw? All these different factors where Felix Bautista or Zach Britton a decade ago, or go back to Jim Johnson for the 2012 team. You know, those are guys that, you know, Buck Showalter just threw out there, or Brandon Hyde with Felix Bautista the last 2 years leading up to last August, just threw out there. And he pitched multiple innings sometimes. He pitched back-to-back days. He pitched 3 out of 4 days when necessary. You can't do that with Craig Kimbrel. And that's where you just have to acknowledge that regardless of the salary, because the money's paid one way or the other, he's not an elite top-shelf closer anymore. And that doesn't mean he's not still a good pitcher. That doesn't mean that he's not going to be an important part of whatever they ultimately accomplish this year. But I think we've seen this now twice, and it played out Sunday. It certainly played out back in mid-May, that when he's going through one of these spells, you can't go down. You can't let the ship go down with him. You've got to adjust, and you got to say, look, Craig, we love you, and we know you're going to get this worked out. But in the meantime, we got to turn to someone else. And if it comes down to him coming in the ninth inning and he starts struggling and hasn't blown the game yet, but it looks like it could be going in that direction, you got to pull him. And we saw Brandon Hyde do that a couple times back in May. So to me, it just illustrates even more why I don't think they should be done with the bullpen. I think Sir Anthony Dominguez, I've said for a while that I wanted to see them add two arms. I'd like to see them add a 7th/8th inning arm. And this is a really simplistic way of thinking about it. I understand. And you know, how I feel about high leverage and using guys and mixing and matching. So it's not finite, you know, in defining that role, but just for lack of a better description, kind of a seventh and eighth inning guy. And I think Dominguez can absolutely be that, but I'd still like to see them land an eighth, ninth inning, legit high leverage reliever that at the very least I would say is 1 and 1A with Craig Kimbrell in terms of closing games. And Craig Kimbrell doesn't like that tough rocks. I mean, you've got to be more consistent. And I think he understands that. He fell on the sword Friday night after giving up the home run to Profar and said, I've got to be better. I haven't been very good the last 2 days. I let my team down. So it's, you know, he understands it, but that's where I still think if we're talking about the likelihood of what they add, if they're going to add any more by Tuesday at 6 p.m., you know, that's where I'm still looking at another bullpen piece, another serious, legit bullpen piece. Problem with that is you've seen some of the reliever moves made since the Austin Hayes for Dominguez and Pache trade, and some teams have really paid a premium for some of the relievers that have moved. And, you know, I don't want to get too much into the names because I'll bring up someone that will since be traded, you know, after our conversation. But
these are also guys the Orioles aren't getting. You know, right, if they were a target and they were going to cost whatever, Kowser, Kerstad, you know, pick your minor league player of choice in the Kobe Mayo sweepstakes. The guys that are off the market. And now you start to shop differently. And to your point, you shop more expensive, probably.
Most likely. I mean, that feels like that's where it's going. And that's why, again, I do commend Mike Elias for the moves that he did make on Friday, where that was still kind of ahead of the curve in terms of the market. Again, not the best acquisitions that were made in terms of talent, but you got some, you know, they've made their roster better. They made the rotation better. They made their bullpen better. But is it enough? You know, I think that's where most would say, yeah, they need to do a little bit more. I think that's evident. You know, is it going to be Mason Miller with his, you know, his pinky on his non-throwing hand that, you know, has him on the IL right now? Probably not. But I think they certainly need to add another bullpen arm because I'll continue to say it. So much focus on the rotation, and understandably so. They've added Zach Eflin, who now profiles as a clear upgrade over Dean Kramer as your number three starter in a postseason series. But, you know, even Corbin Burns, I don't think is going the distance in a postseason game. I mean, have we seen him go to the distance in the regular season? That's not going to change in October. So what does that mean? You need bullpen arms. You need bullpen arms that you can trust. And I've said, for me, the magic number has been you need four guys that you can throw in a variety of game situations and feel pretty darn good about. And I certainly don't think they have four right now. So I think they have a collection of guys that got better with Dominguez added to that mix, at least the potential for Dominguez in that mix. But I'd still feel so much better about this pen if they added another really serious high leverage arm. Who's that going to be? I mean, again, as someone's listening to our conversation, I could name some names that are off the market, or it could be someone that's an Oriole. But as this bullpen's presently constructed, even assuming Craig Kimbrell does get himself situated and straightened out again, as he did back in mid-May, does that mean he's going to be that right for the rest of the year? I don't think you could trust that. So that's where it doesn't mean you bury him. It doesn't mean you banish him to a sixth inning lower leverage role. But it does mean you've got to be willing and ready and able to pivot and change and shift gears if it's pretty apparent that he's not right when you send him out there. So that's where I said, if they can add another pitcher who has some ninth inning experience, some closer experience, whether it's a guy that's a closer right now, or at least has done that. And I did point out Dominguez a couple years back was closing some games for the Phillies in their committee approach, but I'd like to see them add another bullpen arm where you say, all right, the back end eighth, ninth inning situation just got that much better because frankly, not even frankly, it's a kind of the captain obvious statement. I think we all would agree that this bullpen, while it's held up pretty admirably overall in the big picture sense, still not inspiring enough confidence come October. And that's even if Danny Coulomb can come back and look like Danny Coulomb come September.
The structural part of what you speak about in regard to seventh, eighth, ninth rotation, when to bring guys in. We don't have the lefty matchup. I mean, that's a part of baseball that's changed a lot, that you just don't bring in specifics anymore. What do you make of the body of what they have? Because as much as we talk about, well, they'll bring Dominguez and they'll bring different people in the same way that Austin Hayes, Mountcastle, the guys we've talked about that are going to exit, what, more than anything, you'd like to think that after the trading deadline that they would have acquired enough to really dramatically change the rotation in which Brandon Hyde could play it 2 weeks ago, or even last weekend when Kimbrel's melting down, and what options you have when Kimbrel's melting down, that whatever happens before Tuesday at 6 o'clock, it better change the rotation of the bullpen, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and what I've said, and I just alluded to this. I mean, look, there have been contenders who have had worse bullpens than the Orioles do right now. Go back and look a decade ago. Look at the Detroit Tigers. I mean, that was a team that had World Series aspirations, and their bullpen let them down how many times?
That's why I wanted to play them. If we beat the Yankees in 12, that would have been who we saw. That's why I thought that was the best chance to win the World Series.
I mean, it could have been, right? I mean, and again, who knows? But I mean, it's, you know, a bullpen, it's so tough. And this is where I don't want to say empathize, but I can understand how the Orioles have tried to approach it with their pen, because there have been plenty of teams, even in very recent years, where front offices have allegedly gotten smarter, right? With analytics, and you have so much more data and so much more information. But how many times do we see every single year out on the free agent market, teams will sign guys to big money, or they'll trade some prospects for a reliever that was a shutdown guy the previous year. And then what? He's not that anymore, because it's just so, you know, it's so unpredictable. You know, I've said it's like it's a high risk stock that's just up and down. I mean, even guys who had good careers as relievers, and I'm not talking about the Hall of Fame Mariano Rivera types. I mean, Craig Kimbrel is a good example of this, right? I mean, Craig Kimbrel, look where he is on the all-time saves list. He's at least in the Hall of Very Good if he's not going to be a Hall of Famer one day. But look at how his last 6-7 years have played out. He's had some good years. He's had some flat-out bad years. I mean, people complaining about what Craig Kimbrel's been for as an Oriole, go look at some of his recent years, the season ERA. You'll take what he's given you this year compared to that. But it's ups and downs. You know, for every Mariano Rivera type, or, you know, take your pick of a Hall of Fame reliever, Goose Gossage, right? And that, obviously, that's a different era because he was throwing.
Well, for every one of them, there's a Zach Britton who was really good at it for a year or three.
Sure.
But never 5 or 7 or 9. That's a way outlier in the way that we would look at a starting pitcher and say he's got that body of work from the time he's 24 till he's about 32 to really make hay. Relievers, you know, even our best guy, our Darren O'Day, you know, name any of the guys who you thought were really good relievers for the Orioles. 1, 2, 3, by the fourth or fifth year, they've either been choppy, injured, or you don't want to pay them and you don't feel like they're worth it. And Kimbrel would be a great example of something they spent a lot of money on in the offseason that they felt like they were getting a Band-Aid. From the minute they signed him, you were like, you know, he had some hiccups in October in Philadelphia, and Phillies fans didn't mind reminding him of that in June. I'll say this, we heard at the ballpark over the weekend, booing Oriole players. I thought that was sort of against the rules. I didn't even think that even happened in Baltimore anymore, because the team had been so bad for so long and never got booed, as awful as they were. Now that you get good, you know, I don't think they would boo one of their own that way. I think there's a part of Kimbrel being an out-of-towner guy that makes it a little easier to boo him than boo Austin Hayes or Ryan Mountcastle or some guy that's perceived to be around here. You know, he's gotten some ire, and I think salary, age, reputation, if you're not perfect as a closer, you're awful that at least for that day, you know.
I was just going to say, in that moment, right, in that stretch, but that's again, that's what Craig Kimbrel's been. And, you know, to the point that you just made, even relievers who have longer runs, you know, a guy that, again, not a Hall of Famer, but let's say someone who has a really solid 10 or 11 year career as a reliever, chances are you look at their 10 or 11 years, they had two or three seasons in the midst of those 11 that weren't very good. And that's my point in terms of bullpen arms. And as much as you try to address it, and sometimes you do address it with, you know, big contracts, you know, even if it's not a closer, let's just say a really good setup man. I mean, we've seen setup men in recent years even get some really nice contracts on the open market. It doesn't always work out. So that's where sometimes you play it out and say, okay, let's look at our internal options. We're clearly missing Felix Bautista this year. You know, to your point, Kimbrel was the Band-Aid, albeit an expensive one. And, you know, there probably was some thought that there was hope that Tyler Wells would eventually move into a bullpen role, because I never expected him to be in the rotation all year long. Now, if he had stayed healthy, he probably would be starting right now. I mean, who knows? But the point is, you play it out, you see what's on the market, you see which of your guys has emerged or which of your guys has taken a step back. And I, you know, Jacob Webb's a good example of this. Gave up the home run on Sunday, but how many times have we talked about it? I mean, Jacob Webb is arguably, and I know this is also, this kind of sounds like damning with praise to the entire group, but you know, Jacob Webb, you could make an argument, has been their best reliever or most reliable, let's say, in terms of variety of roles, whether he's coming in to face the heart of the order in the sixth inning, spelling the starter, or whether he's pitching in the eighth inning of a game. So, you know, he's been much more of a positive than people anticipated back in April. On the flip side, Kimbrel's had his struggles, you know, for these couple stretches now. Yennier Cano has been good overall, but certainly hasn't been, I don't think, anywhere close to the dominant version that we saw of him in the first half of last season. And we've seen him have his issues with inherited runners. You know, Cionel Perez, you know, he's okay for some stretches and then not very good for other stretches. They've obviously missed Coulomb for a while now. So, you know, you go through that and you say, okay, who are there four or five guys that they're really going to lean on the hardest in October? And I think that's still so up in the air right now. I mean, I think all those guys are,
I don't know if you can lean on Kimbrel. I mean, I don't know that there's a point. Is he going to be seventh or eighth inning pitcher by then? And then what's he going to do in the seventh or eighth inning? That's different than he does in the ninth inning. I mean, going out there and throwing strikes, going out there and missing bats. They don't have enough of it. And we've talked about that for four and a half months, and now they're losing. Right. And now they're up against it. And to your point, we thought they were going to have to pay dearly for whatever pitching, whatever it was going to be out there. Now they're in a position of, they better do something. There better be more deals here, because they need to do more than Sir Anthony Dominguez in the bullpen.
Sure. Yeah. And I like the Dominguez move. I think you look at him, and again, I know his season ERA is what, 4.5 right now. Hurt by the long ball, especially a couple outings for Philadelphia that really, you know, kind of spoiled his ERA. But I like the strikeouts. He does miss bats. You know, that's more swing and miss, and has not had major issues walking people. You know, again, if you can get that home run rate to normalize a little bit, I think you've got someone who, again, is not my new closer, but
we built him a wall.
Sure, exactly. Hey, that helps for anyone, right? I mean, it really does. But let's take the ninth inning on Sunday. Weirdness aside, right, of the reviews and some of a couple of the missed calls and the play at second base with Gunnar Henderson and the potential slide rule being in effect there. But you just look at that inning. It's not like Cano gave up all this hard contact, right? But he's a pitch the contact ground ball kind of guy. That just fails you sometimes. And I don't mean in the sense of your defense stinks or you make errors. Sometimes when you pitch to contact, even soft contact will find grass sometimes. And that's just how it works. How do you combat that? Swing and miss, strikeouts, right? And they don't have a whole lot of that in their bullpen right now. So Dominguez helps with that some. He's not a crazy strikeout guy, but he certainly misses bats. He's averaged more than a strikeout per inning. Even this year, his strikeout rate's been a little bit better even at times in the past. So I certainly think he can be part of that picture. But yeah, I think if we're reconvening in a couple days and we're talking about them having not added anything else to their bullpen, Nestor, I'm having a tough time being overly confident about how that's going to hold up and translate in October. And that's even with the assumption that I do fully expect Craig Kimbrel to get himself righted again. The point is with Kimbrel is he just goes through these waves, right? And He can be humming along and pitching really well. And we saw this through the second half of May and through the month of June. He was really good over that 5-6 week period. I mean, no real major concerns or anything like that, but he has a tendency, especially in the back nine of his career at this point, you know, way back nine at this point, that he goes through some of these spells. And my point is, you've got to have the arms to turn to if it's apparent that he's going through one of those spells again come October. You know, you can't let the ship go down with him. You got to bail and say, sorry, Craig, we're going to someone else. Who's that someone else going to be in that spot? And that's the big question here. So, you know, we've talked about Tanner Scott. We've talked about some of the other names that are out there. There are lesser names out there that I think can still help them. But, you know, in terms of a late inning, high leverage guy, I have a tough time seeing this team getting deep into October without adding someone else to that conversation. It doesn't mean Craig Kimbrel gets banished to the seventh inning suddenly. It means I need someone else in addition to him, because if he on October 8th in the divisional round, I think that would be the divisional series at that point. If he looks shaky, I've got to turn to someone right away. I can't let him have the whole ninth inning and allow him to blow the game. So, and to be clear, I'm not just picking on Kimbrel and saying that would apply to any of my relievers in that situation. So, you know, none of these guys are Mariano Rivera in his prime. So point is, you've got to have other options. You've got to have four or five guys that you really trust to be able to pitch in a variety of situations. And, you know, some of that, as you mentioned, you know, you don't really have the traditional lefty one out guy anymore. You still have lefties and you can still pick your spots when three out of four hitters, you know, the next three out of four hitters are left-handed or switch hitters. And yeah, that's a good spot for Cionel Perez, or really more so you hope Danny Coulon when he returns. So, you know, are they looking to add a left-handed reliever? I've seen some chatter and some reports of that. I think that's possible, but I think it's more so whether it's a lefty or a righty, you want someone that has, you know, not a splits guy. You want someone that is equally good against left-handed and right-handed hitting. And, you know, it's just going to go out there and put out the fire for you or protect that one run lead. So,
well, just from a Baltimore perspective, you mentioned Jim Johnson. We've mentioned Zach Britton. We've mentioned what Kimbrel used to be. We mentioned what Batista was. I don't know, man. If they wake up Wednesday morning and you're still asking the question, okay, Kimbrel came in and he wasn't any good, where do we go then? Boy, that's been a dangling question for 4 months, because I don't know that any of us, that when that happens, and we've seen it happen, what, 6-7 times this year, when you get into that position, what happens, and what would that October or what would that late September look like, or what would it look like against Cleveland this weekend, where I'm sitting in Cleveland right now? And unless they wake up Wednesday with a solution to that, that sounds a little bit like Zach Britton, or a little bit like Felix Batista, or a little bit like better than Craig Kimbrel, something that you and I, that all of baseball, you know, watching Buster Olney on TV and talking about this, Rosenthal afterward, they look at it and say, okay, now they have a real solution at that position in the ninth inning with one out, two guys on, Kimbrel's blowing up. It's a 5-4 game. They're playing the Astros 3 weeks from now or whatever. Who's coming in? Man, we haven't had an answer for that at all. And they spent a lot of money on Kimbrel, right? And now it's like, okay, you need that job taken care of. We know the value of that job over the course of all these names I've mentioned, just in our own organization, let alone around the league. What that costs, what that would cost when you're bidding against other teams who need it too. and this 6 o'clock deadline on Tuesday night, you know, they're going to pinch Elias for more than he wanted to be pinched for. And I think the early trade, to your point, speaks to his acumen to get out in front of this, to at least not be sitting here without Eflin starting on Monday, without having Dominguez already on our side of the fence, that they were proactive. He got the party going kind of early, earlier than almost anybody last week.
Well, let's put it in really simplistic terms. I think we agree they need at least one more bullpen arm, right? I think that's the overwhelming consensus, if not unanimous among Orioles fans at this point in time. You don't want to be in a position where you have to overpay for two different relievers. I don't think they overpaid for Dominguez. And look, he's a rental. There's an option there. I mean, whether you bring him back or not, we'll see. You know, it depends how well he pitches. as is the case with any guy that's, you know, in a position where they could be a free agent or whatever. But at the very least, if you're going to have to overpay, now you only are overpaying for one. You didn't want to be in a position where you're overpaying in two different deals for two relievers. Whereas, you know, I think with Dominguez, as I said, Austin Hayes, I would have wagered, if you asked me yes or no, is he on the 2025 team, even though he had one more year of club control, I would have said no. I would have said he would have been either non-tendered or dealt for a song, right? And you know, they ended up, you know, not saying it was a monster return, but Dominguez is someone who has really impressive credentials in the
Let me ask this about Hayes too. A first place team that thinks they're winning the World Series, and now Austin Hayes thinks he's winning the World Series. You know, they had no problem saying we want Austin Hayes on our team, and you and I were like, oh, he's an all-star, but we can't find play, and he's slumping. Is he going to be expensive next year? All that. The Phillies didn't mind. And they're like, he's a pile diver to the Phillies right now. They thought that.
At the same time, go look at what their offensive production's been in center field this year. And now with Austin Hayes being in their left field picture, they can play Brandon Marsh in center field a little bit more. So part of that is, as I've said over and over and over, the Orioles are not the only really good team in baseball that has holes and deficiencies and concerns. I mean, the Phillies, they fortified their bullpen. They've added an outfielder that now they hope will alleviate some of the just absolute black hole that center field has been for them offensively. I mean, you know, so, you know, they'll I've seen it. They're playing Brandon Marsh in center field more, and they think that might be their solution. But I think that's part of what, and this is why I had said in the first place, Nestor, you know, leading into the trade deadline, talking about some of these deals where, you know, don't dismiss the possibility of trading from your major league roster, because it's just so, you know, the Orioles and Phillies found a fit where they're both contenders. They're both trying to get to the World Series. And they say, you know what? We can give you one of our bullpen arms because we've got other guys that we feel better about. But Sir Anthony, hey, he's still a guy that has some qualities and some upside that you would like. And, you know, we're willing to sacrifice that if it means we can bring in another outfielder that will really help us, because center field has been such a black hole for us offensively, and he can play left, and then we can move Brandon Marsh to center. So you always, you know, you can find some fits like that, especially understanding this is at least has been perceived to be a seller's market where there just aren't that many definitive sellers. Although certainly the Tampa Bay Rays, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention, they've gone full blown sell mode. I think that's pretty evident, but they'll probably be back in contention next year because they're just the Rays, but
yeah, I was going to say that's who they are. The Blue Jays, who stumble in here this week, have a dumpster fire. Like, and they are where the Orioles were 2 years ago, thinking like, we're on the verge of 3 to 5 years of blue water and playoffs and 90 win, you know, potential, 100 win potential every year. And they're in the toilet. You better make sure the Orioles aren't the toilet team in 25 or 26 that have this happen with some injuries, with some disappointment, with guys that, in the case of Guerrero and Bichette, you know, a lot of things have not bloomed there. We're going to see that the next couple of days. It's so short term, all of this. I mean, the Rays were going to win the World Series this time last year, right? Then their arms all fall off. Now they're having a second year sell off, right? And they didn't win again, and they've never won. And, you know, they haven't, here we go again, right?
Yeah. I mean, and look, you have some teams that try to rebuild like the Orioles did, and they never even get to this point. You know, they're in the perpetual, at best case scenario, they get to a 75 win platform, and then they don't get any better than that.
Well, it's all the more reason for your Cubs and your Royals, and you know, win when you get there, when you have that window, and this is their window, and that's why I just feel like this year is so important, because they're only going to get more expensive after this. All their best players are only going to get more expensive.
Oh, but they also have, I mean, Jackson Holliday's played 10 games in the majors. I mean, if Colby Mayo is as good as talent evaluators think he can be with the bat, which is a Ryan Mountcastle with way more upside and way more power potential, you know, then there's that. I mean, there's Masai. So look, I mean,
we're all like, let's get him here. And then when they get here, they hit the ball like Colton Cowles, and we're like, oh, you know,
take some time. Sure.
Yeah, sure.
Well, and that goes back to my point that I made in our previous segment where, you know, I hear all the arguments, and look, I've said it too. I'm not going to sit here and say that I'm, you know, I've been devoid of mentioning that, but you know, how much is too much? Okay. You've moved on from Hayes. Are you really going to trade a Mullins or a Mountcastle, or dare I say both of them? I don't think that, but 2 days from now, we might be talking about that. But the point is with that, you love your young talent. I mean, my goodness. What Gunnar Henderson's become in a couple years, what Adley Rutschman has been in a couple years, what Jordan Westberg has become in about a calendar year compared to where he was at this time
last
year.
That's why they're in first place.
Sure, but
the Royals weren't in first place when it was Kane and Moustakas and Hosmer because they didn't get there. They came and they were more like Guerrero and more like Biggio and more like Colton Cowser, more like we're going to scuffle a little bit, as opposed to Gunnar Henderson and Adley Rutschman and Westberg, who stepped to the front of class and said, we're the R's and we're waiting on the Kersteds and the Cowsers and the Holidays to be R's instead of Mike B's. They're still Mike B's. And I always think of Maurice, my listener from 30 years ago. My blind listener used to call me and say there are R's and there might be's, and we're still in the might be phase with all these Norfolk kids. But you have to give them at bats, and in order to give them at bats, you have to give Austin Hayes away. Well, you better get a reliever out of it if you do that.
Well, and that's what's look. These are the kind of moves that are really easy to make in the winter, right? Or during spring training, even a couple days before the season starts. But when you're in the midst of the bullets flying and you're in the midst of a pennant race, it's where it is challenging. And that's why I said Sunday was such, you know, I don't know if irony is the right term, but just the fact that there's been so much chatter about Mullins and Mountcastle, and those two guys win the game for them on Sunday. So that, and let's be clear, if you have the conviction and you've come to a decision as a talent evaluator, if you're Mike Elias and Sig Meidel and the decision makers, and Brandon Hyde being consulted with that there as well, Sunday doesn't change your mind or shouldn't, but it does remind you of, hey, these are still guys that have been productive, good players for you over the last few years. It was 3 years ago, Nestor, and I even went back and looked just to make sure, because I wanted to make sure that I was remembering it correctly. 3 years ago, Cedric Mullins was MVO, you know, most valuable Oriole, first 30-30 Oriole in franchise history, and Ryan Mountcastle led them in RBIs. I went back and looked at my most valuable Oriole voting, and I get it. In 2021, they were terrible, but they were 1-2. 3 years later, we're talking about trading them. Now, part of that is Cedric Mullins is clear and had issues with injuries. Mountcastle, certainly that felt like that ended up being more of his peak than what we thought at the time was maybe this guy becomes an all-star kind of player. And, you know, that hasn't really played out that way, but there's still guys that play a lot and there's still guys that help them win ball games. So my point with that is don't trade them for a song, right? Because you don't know for sure if Coby Mayo is going to come up and give you at least what Ryan Mountcastle gives you over the next 2 months of the season and into October. And the same thing with, you know, okay, Colton Cowser can play center field, and Colton Cowser plays a really good center field defensively. Colton Cowser has been really good for them this year overall, but
you didn't see them send him to Philadelphia for Dominguez, right? Like, you know what I mean? He still is they love him more than they love Austin Hayes because of his price and because of his age, right? And that's baseball. That's
sure.
We've watched that our whole lives, right?
Sure. But there's also the trickle down effect of, okay, Colton Cowser is going to play center. Who's going to play left? Heston Kerstad dropped a ball at the wall on Friday night. Hey, I'm not saying that he didn't have to run a long way. I'm not saying that was the easiest play in the world for an outfielder who hasn't played left field at Camden Yards a whole lot, but he didn't make the play. And that's a play that, even though Austin Hayes' defense had fallen off this year compared to where it was a couple years ago, Austin Hayes probably made that play. So, or Colton Cowser definitely made that play, but then Colton Cowser's playing center, especially if you're dealing Mullins. So I just think the Orioles have to tread carefully. Look, if there's a move that makes 100% sense and is going to make them better now and in the future, then sure. Okay, trade Cedric Mullins or trade Ryan Mountcastle, but you better be sure about it, because again, if you're trading that much veteran talent and then you're just handing the reins over to younger guys exclusively in the midst of a pennant race, and especially some of these guys who aren't quite proven yet, then you know, that can go the other way. That can go a way that you don't want it to go the rest of the way. So, again, this is all conjecture, and Cedric Mullins might have a good two final months, and maybe he's even back on the roster next year. Or, you know, same with Mountcastle, who has a couple more years of club control. Or those guys might get dealt in the offseason. But, you know, the point is this is a really fascinating time, because the last 2 years we've talked so much about Mike Elias, you know, some people even saying hoarding the talent at the major league level and keeping all those guys at Norfolk blocked, right? We talked about it with Joey Ortiz before the Burns trade. So we finally saw a signal that that's starting to shift, and they moved on from Hayes. Whether it's in the next 2 days or in the next 2 months or the next 6 months, you know, there's probably a decent chance that happens with some other veteran players. But again, doing that in November or doing that in January or February is a way different animal than doing that in late July. So I just think you have to be careful there, because even though you can't quantify it, there are such things as chemistry and clubhouse culture and where everyone kind of fits in that hierarchy. And that doesn't mean you don't make the trade, but you have to consider those factors. And, you know, they felt confident in what they were doing with the Hayes trade. We'll see if any other veterans are moved, or maybe it'll just be they do move on from a Connor Norby, Kyle Stowers, Heston Kerstad, you know, whoever it is, to go land another, I don't want to say big fish necessarily, but a bigger fish. And I'll go back to what we said at the beginning. If there's one more move they must make, they've got to add another bullpen arm. If we're talking about the same bullpen 2 days from now, I am not feeling overly confident. And that's even if they can maybe move Albert Suarez to a relief role or transition Chase McDermott to a relief role, which are also things they can do down the stretch that might help. But I think of those ideas more as like plan B, plan C, plan D type elements than saying, oh, that's going to be our plan A.
Luke Jones is here. He is a Baltimore Luke. You can find him out on the internet. He'll be having the football hat on. He'll switch the purple hat backwards to the orange hat all week long. Or Birds are in Cleveland this week, a couple games against the Blue Jays. And of course, the Ravens on the backfields and trying to get Lamar right. Let's circle back, and we'll sort of end it for the day with this, because they're going to play a lot of baseball on Monday. People may hear this on Tuesday. If you do, I apologize. And Eflin will already have had a start. Let's take it full back to the beginning of the conversation, where made early moves, really first mover, Elias. I mean, I was kind of shocked that, you know, it all kind of felt, you know, started happening on Thursday and Friday before the weekend happened. The Eflin deal, as we sit here and say, all right, doubleheader, they're starting Eflin and they're starting Povich. This is 6 weeks ago. If we would have looked at this and said, is this good enough? Is Eflin what we wanted in the starting side? And I know you were much more bullish in the bullpen. We're down on Kramer for obvious reasons, down on all the starters, you know, beyond Rodriguez and Burns at this point, but are not up on them as a game three starter in October. Eflin in a vacuum, that's a fascinating deal because of the money, because they gave up three guys that most, you know, even the nerdiest people didn't know all the names or who these young guys are, or what they might be for the Phillies, or excuse me, for the Rays. But also, you're taking on money from a franchise that doesn't like to spend money, that spent money on a real pitcher and then said, well, later on, we'll just steal him for a bag of beans and get rid of the last $18 million on his contract and not worry about that. That's the way the Rays do business. And this is opening the minds. And we're going to, and most of what I did last week was about Mr. Rubenstein's money, right? And how this is going to work and how payroll is going to work and how Katie Griggs is going to sell more patches to T. Rowe Price to put all this money together that it's going to take to get these guys. But $18 million pitchers, you know, Mr. Angelos may have did a half a roll in his grave at $18 million rental pitchers, because they're stepping into big boy territory with paying players. And when you're talking about $18 million, I mean, I don't know how much their payroll will be next year. What's it going to be? 80, 90? I don't, you tell me. I know it's been 40 and 50 in recent years. And you always tack on that Chris Davis money and the Bobby Bonilla money and all that crap that adds to their annual payroll. But what they're really spending on a baseball team next year. And I'm with you. They behave like a small market team. They think they're a small market team. Elias came into this believing he's a small market team, believing they're going to act more like the Rays. And for that, I look at Burns and say, well, you got 8 weeks to figure him out, because they've replaced him. They gave his money away next year.
knowing that he's going to be a couple hundred million dollars, but just saying, well, let him go pitch for the Yankees. Let him go pitch somewhere else. We're going to, you know, no matter how good he is, if he's a bulldog in October, he wins the World. If he wins the World Series for him, all the better to let him go. The business of baseball takes over this week, and that's why I spent all of last week talking about it, even though it's nerdy and Eric Fisher's thick and Maury Brown's thick and certainly Marty Conway's thick. We try to take it to a different level here at NST, and I'm proud of that because I think at the heart of this, when you're talking about $18 million pitchers that you're bringing in, no matter how Monday goes, this is your guy now. This is your guy. You married this guy through the end of next year now. You're trying to win two World Series with this guy, and that says a lot to me that Elias bid in, and it also says that he didn't give up Jackson Holliday to get him either.
Well, and that's, you just nailed it with the last part where, look, if you're, and I don't even mean Zach Eflin, just in general, when you are in a position where you are willing to take on some money, and look, this doesn't mean that you take on bad contracts. Zach Eflin's, that's $18 million, and some people will say, oh, well, he has a 4 ERA. I mean, that's kind of the going rate on the open market in terms of when you're getting someone who is, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of slightly above average, league average starter. Now, last year, he was sixth in Cy Young voting. He was really good last year. You know, he's one of the best pitchers in the American League last year.
Consider Kramer a league average starter?
Statistically, he has been over the last couple of years. I mean,
well, that's what I'm saying. When Dean Kramer hits the market, he's going to get paid by somebody. If he hit the market tomorrow, somebody would give him 3 years and $30 million. If he didn't have the injury earlier, you know, like if he was out on the field pitching, that's the harm of baseball, and that's all the more reason that Cade Povich gets the, you know, that sure. Any of these young guys get the ball, you know.
Yeah, and let's be clear. You know, if Eflin was at $18 million per for 3 years, then yeah, I wouldn't love that, especially when he's at age 30. But when you're talking about next year, and you hit on it, so I don't want to make too much of this because Corbin Burnes, assuming they don't re-sign him, and look, is there a possibility that David Rubenstein wants to re-sign him and they feel that we can't let him go? I guess. Am I betting on that? Am I holding my breath on that? Am I risking my mortgage on that? Certainly not. So working under the assumption that he moves on, working under the assumption that Craig Kimbrel moves on. I mean, Eflin's a good chunk of that money, but it's not as though that would mean that they're going to raise their payroll a whole lot. So, but it's a sign because they had not taken on a contract even for one extra year, let alone talking about it being $18 million. So you hope that that's a sign because, as I've said, as you're getting closer to Gunnar Henderson and Adley Rutschman and some of these other younger guys, as they get closer and closer to arbitration and getting more expensive, and then talking about free agency after that, you do have to start to look at your long-term roster planning a little bit more and saying, okay, you know, how important is our farm system going to be? You know, how many of these guys in the farm system are we going to keep to then replace and replenish our major league roster? Because even the most, you know, the highest payroll teams don't re-sign all of their guys, nor should you re-sign all of your guys. You know, the Orioles, it would have been organizational malpractice to extend Austin Hayes based on what they had seen from him the last year or two. That would have been a bad investment to give him a long-term deal, even though 3 years ago, you could probably find fans who wanted to, or even media who suggested it. But the guys you want to be able to keep, you want to have the resources to do it. But that's where you say, okay, how are you going to get better? Are you going to spend a little more money? And this is an example where they were willing to take on some money with Eflin, so they didn't have to give up quite as much to get a pitcher of that caliber because you were.
And they have never been that franchise in the 18 years I've known you or whatever, right? Like they've never been that franchise.
I mean,
they've never been in a position to deal to take on $18 million for next year anyway, right?
And that's the big part.
They were much more on the end of the market of, we'll go get, you know, Jimenez in the offseason, you know, or whatever, or buy a pitcher in February is what they think about.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. I mean, I'm trying to think of even examples of even position players. Like, you know, for example, when they traded for Bobby Bonilla in 95, he was under contract for 96. And look, we got to remember inflation and salaries have gone up. So there's always relative comparisons being
made. They had a lot of money in 96. They didn't care about money.
Sure.
They haven't had money in 20 years, and it doesn't
Right.
If the heart of anything hits anyone, for all the Marty Conwaying I've done and all of the, I mean, I had Kurt Bodenhausen on last week, who was the expert on all things, you know, Sportico and valuations of franchises. They don't really know what the Orioles are. And the fans are coming, but it's $65 for the whole month and revenue and cheap seats and just come on out and be, I mean, dude, you're out there a lot. They give something away, they get people, and they give hats away, people come out. Tuesday nights when they're not and it's $5 night or whatever, the notion that this is a real pennant race and they've sold into these all you can come deals for the next 2 months, you'd like to think. And I'll tell you, one of the saddest things, and I'll say this out loud, on the 26th anniversary, it'll be on Friday, of having this radio station 26 years, I found last September to be sad. I went out to those games for clinching, and they're clinching for the first time in a generation, really, and there's 21,000 people there. And I know you would say school night, this, that, or whatever, but it doesn't feel like the movie Major League, where this thing is getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and more people, and September is going to be 40,000 out there every night because they're just, which in the veins of the fans, and they know they can't go to the playoff games because it's $500 to get into the playoff games and $1,000 to go to the World Series games, that this would be, you'd start to feel it. You start to see the orange flamingos on the lawn a little bit. We need to see that growth, not for Nestor's ego or for the grave of Peter Angelos. It's to pay Corbin Burns to stay. It's to pay Adley Rutschman to stay. It's to pay Gunnar Henderson to stay, because this team, as Kurt Bodenhausen brought up, this team was bought for $1.8 million because it's financially ruinous. This franchise has been a disaster financially in Definitely. Regard to generating revenue, in regard to their Mickey Mouse Bouja television network that has crippled another franchise down the road. Like, all of those back, how the sausage is made, how Kevin Brown gets intimidated off the air, like the stuff that Greg Bader does, the way the place is managed and how much money they really bring in is going to dictate what kind of franchise they're going to be. And that's why they need to be very successful the next 8 weeks. They need to really grow all branches of Birdland, and including getting people like me to come back, because they need my money too. They need everybody's money. And that's a philosophical thing for Katie Griggs to deal with. And I've been reading a lot about her. I'll never meet her. They'll never let me near her. They'll go to her and tell her that I'm a bad guy and poison me. Like, but I'm watching. And everybody who knows me knows I'm going to be watching, because this is how you make the franchise real. It's going to take our money to pay these players. And that's just a fact. That's the way it works in New York, Chicago, and LA, and Boston, and everywhere else. They need more money, because these are the times where the money gets in the way of deals or how good we could be, in addition to the farm system's unbelievable. We all agree with that. You don't want to give it away. One of the reasons you don't give it away is you don't have the money to give it away, because you need Kobe Mayo to come up here and play for 5 years. You can't just give him away for that A's reliever right now.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I'm glad you brought this up, because it's something I came across not long ago. And, you know, you made mention of giveaways, and obviously they did a Rutschman bobblehead on Sunday. They did the floppy hat on Friday night, which by
they had
the way,
two, they had two bobbleheads.
I have a floppy hat for you, cause you made mention of that. So you'll be getting that the next time I see you. But I looked, and it was the Astros, which, you know, Houston, pretty big market, right? Bigger than Baltimore. And certainly they've had a lot more success over the recent history. And Mike Elias and Sig Meinel are intimately familiar with that. But I was looking at Houston, and I was looking at another team. I was shocked at just how many giveaways the Astros do. And I'm not just talking their weekends. They do a lot of weeknight stuff. Seriously, go look at their promotional schedule. I was surprised by that. So I guess my point with that is, even if a big market team that's won World Series and has drawn and had all this success, again, trash cans aside, just for the point of this, you know, this example, it tells me that you need to continue to offer all those bells and whistles and giveaways and ticket deals and all that. And part of that, Nestor, I think, is to condition people, incentivize people to come to the ballpark, and then they're seeing a winning product on top of that, that then it becomes the place to be that you want to continue, even if, yeah, the ticket prices increase and you're not getting maybe quite the same deals, but you feel you're getting a great entertainment value, a great product. So, you know, their attendance is up. It's not as though the attendance hasn't had growth. Has it been as much as they would like to see? Has it been as much as what's going to signal long-term stability? Not just stability. They have stability. Lease, money coming to upgrade the ballpark, all that. You want it to thrive, right? So in order for it to thrive, they need more growth and they need sustainable growth. But I still
unlike
think
Tampa as an example, where they win and nobody comes.
Right, exactly.
Right?
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, the Orioles
don't have that problem, but they need to extract more money out of the fans they have is what they need to do.
But I guess my point with that was I was shocked at how many giveaways they were even doing on like a Tuesday night. Now, it wasn't a bobblehead every single night, you know, right? It wasn't the one that people were lining up for 2 hours outside the gate for every single time. But I was really surprised. Now, a big part of that also lends itself to your business partners, your sponsors, right? I mean, think how many giveaways over the last decade plus the Orioles would have where Masson would be the presenting sponsor for the giveaway. That tells you what. They don't have many sponsors. They don't have many people that are really wanting to be married to them financially and business-wise. So with them being better, the hope is if you're the Orioles and you're people that, you know, you're working in the organization and have the vision that you'll have business partners that want to sponsor a bobblehead or sponsor a t-shirt or sponsor a really nice looking hat or a jersey or whatever it is. And you can do a little bit more of that and that should help your attendance. Now, yeah, ideally in an ideal world, in a perfect world, you could just charge regular price every single night, not have to do any bells or whistles or ticket deals or anything like that. And you draw 40,000 on average. I'm not sure how many markets where that exists anymore. Cause I just think the whole thing, not just Baltimore exclusive challenges, but just in a general sense with TV and just how fractured entertainment has become, how fractured sports viewing has become other than the NFL, which is just, you know, so head and shoulders above everything else. Everything else is more niche. So you've got to find ways to attract people to that. So like I said, to see the Astros promotional schedule and just to see how many giveaways they had on the heels of them being what, a year removed from winning the World Series, 2 years removed from winning the World Series, that was enlightening to me. And it told me that, you know, you have to continue to do those things because watching on TV, whether it's Masson or not, watching on TV in general has become a way better experience in 2024 than it was 10 years ago, let alone 20, 30 years ago. So, you know, you've got to find ways to attract people and cast a wider net. And I think that's something that they will need to continue to work on, continue to figure out. It's gotten better, but you want it to continue to grow because to your point, if you want the Orioles to have that $180 million payroll at one point where that means you can keep a Gunnar Henderson and maybe a couple other young guys. And yeah, maybe you had to deal one or two or someone leaves via free agency. You've got to continue to grow and you've got to have a long-term vision, a long-term health for this organization that, you know, it's gotten better, but it's still not where it needs to be in a big picture sense.
Luke Jones is here. He will be there in Owings Mills. He'll be at the ballpark all week. He'll be on the trading deadline, all of that, and more. We'll get some Ravens in here, too. Stay with us. We're Baltimore Positive.